Welcome to episode 17 of the Golf Betting System podcast. We're discussing this week the Valspar Championship on the PGA Tour and the Hero Indian Open on the European Tour. This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. I'm Steve Bamford, PGA Tour previewer at Golf Betting System. With me is our European Tour expert. It's Paul Williams. Evening to you, Paul.
Evening, Steve. How are you doing?
We're very good, very good. Indian good. Open for you to get stuck into this week. We'll move on to that in a few short minutes.
Yes, looking forward to it.
Now, I've got an announcement. We've also got our resident pundit. He's not a resident guest anymore. He's a resident pundit. It's Barry O'Hanran. How are you, Barry?
I'm good, thanks, guys. Cheers for the updated status.
Oh, it's brilliant.
You've been promoted, Barry.
Yeah, I mean, you could have had resident donkey based on my recent bets, but, you know, I'll take pundit.
To be fair, Paul Dunn, he was flying last week, wasn't he?
Very low.
he was flying under the radar. Right, just a bit of housekeeping. It's golfbettingsystem.co.uk, our website. Search golf betting or golf betting tips in your search engine and you'll come across us. Twitter handles, I'm at Bamford Golf. Paul is at Golf Betting and Barry is at A Good Talk Golf. Also want to mention, I know lots of you are using iTunes to listen to us each and every week, but we do desperately need your reviews. So we need reviews. Get some reviews going on iTunes because that will help us spread the word in terms of the podcast greatly with the powers that be at the Lord of iTunes. Also, if you're listening on Podbean, of course, give us a follow, and of course, any likes, always much appreciated. All of the content we're about to talk about this week is beneath the description if you're listening to this on Podbean. Live links through to our previews, predictor models, and the like. Right, okay, let's talk about last week quickly. Barry and I are going to do this because Paul... can you believe Paul wasn't watching golf over the weekend? It's disgusting. Absolutely disgusting. And you call yourself an expert. Absolutely disgusting.
Yeah, just missed it yesterday, but yeah. Go on, you carry on, boys.
Absolutely disgusting. Barry, how did we miss Phil Mickelson?
Because we didn't believe that he could do... Well, sorry, we actually did speak about him last week and saying we all thought he was going to win again. We just, I don't know, ignored the obvious signs that he was playing some shit-hot golf and thought he might be doing it a little bit later in the year. It's a pretty bad miss when you think about it. You know, like his previous three tournaments that he played, he was top six in the three of them in a row. So yeah.
And striking the ball very well. Yeah. West Coast expert, altitude expert, blah blah blah.
Yeah, it's kind of an it's an unforgivable mistake to miss it. Especially when there was extra play. You know, we spoke about there was extra places going on, so you're getting nearly 10% of the field covered, and you know, he wouldn't have been one of the short price favourites, so it's a bit of a whoopsie. But
25 to 1 he was at the start.
25 to 1, yeah.
Yeah, it's a
little bit in there.
I think the other thing with Phil was that he was clearly, you know, doing his usual scrambling and putting well, but the ball striking was really switched on. First win for 4¾ years, and that's the thing, isn't it? It just nags away at you, 25 to 1 every week, pretty much week in, week out, and he never actually wins, but he did win. So, and that, of course, there's a lot of guys, a lot of experts, a lot of the, you know, the golf Twitterati on Twitter, on YouTube, saying that Phil, you know, couldn't win again, wouldn't win again. So he's clearly, you know, he shut those guys up. And it was a great victory. And, of course, now into 20-1. I saw 22-1 this morning. And I'm sure that won't be there now for the Masters.
Yeah. Oh, well, I mean... Look, we can, from a gambling point of view, that's a bit of a fail, but from a golf fan's point of view, yesterday was absolutely fantastic. It was a brilliant tournament to watch, really exciting. There was just so much going on. That
close from Thomas was amazing, absolutely amazing.
That weekend from him was insane. What was he, 11 shots off at the halfway point? Like he did.
Yeah. I think he shot 16 under, didn't he, across the two rounds?
I saw
quoted that he was matched at 720 on Betfair.
I hope they laid that off after he dunked his eagle on 18.
It'd have been significantly shorter by that point.
Yeah, I was on Betfair because I had a little bit of action on Thomas last night, and he went as low as 1.18.
Oh wow!
As soon as it all caught up, 1.18. Well done, Paul, as well for Scott Jameson last week. Who he didn't let you down, did he? He finished seventh, and you had seven places each way with Coral, so you got a full return.
Brilliant. Yeah, that was quite nice. He does like his South African golf, Scott Jameson. So, that was pleasing to get that one in. Clearly, George Coetzee won. That's kind of his level, isn't it? You know, when he's playing these small co-sanctioned events and he's playing some decent golf, he can convert. Whether you can justify backing him at 10, 12 to 1, I couldn't do it. But, you know, so be it. He goes and wins and good luck to him. But, there'll be plenty of other events where he gets in a similar position and he won't convert. He was two over early on in his round yesterday and managed to pull it round. And I guess there wasn't a great deal chasing him, really. But, no, fair enough.
I suppose you have to build in the price against what he's likely to face in terms of competition. And like you, I know Barrett, I watched it as well. He was never really under pressure from a player of any real quality, was he? You know, there was Sam Horsfield up there. There was the Finnish guy who was kind of took the lead for a period of time.
Yeah, Kahonen, yeah.
Yeah, and he did wobble, but you know, when I think it was seven straight one putts. At one stage, and
he was putting well all week. So you know, he's putting well, he's a good player. He knows that course like the back of his hand. So you take it on the chin. I was never going to back him at that price. And if he wins, he wins. And yeah, he did. So there you go.
Be interesting.
Barry.
Sorry, I was just saying, it'd be interesting to see if he can use this to kick on a bit better. Because like you said, he started. You know, he was a couple over early on. He had a monstrous wobble on 8 and 9, and I don't know how he made par on both of those holes, but he pulled it off. And that just seemed to settle him for a real nice back 9 charge. So, you know, that could be the kind of thing that kicks his confidence on a level and maybe helps him to a higher higher standard tournament victory than, you know, these co-sanctioned events. He's a seriously talented player. And it's just the confidence.
What kind of victory does that open for Coetzee? Does it do a lot for him, really?
No, it's a tiny event, so he won't have any better playing privileges than he had before. I mean, his next step, he's got to get himself into the top 50. I think they put him 97th, somewhere like that, without looking. It was just inside the top 100, I think. Yeah. So he's moving forward, but he's, you know, to your point, Barry, he's been in this situation before. He's got himself over the line in a small co-sanctioned event, and you think, well, you know, that's got to build him up. And then the next time he's in position with some decent players chasing him down, it all goes to pot. So but perhaps that's me just sounding bitter because I've backed him when he's he started throwing it in the water on the 72nd hole before, but that's golf for you, isn't it?
Should we talk Hero Indian Open? I know that you've actually just published your actual preview. We're recording this just about 6 o'clock UK time on Monday evening. So do you want to talk through, you know, 10-12 minutes around the Hero Indian Open and the course? What I know, it's an evil course. It's very, very difficult. I can see that the field strength seems to be better this year. They seem to have got some half-decent players coming over for this. Do you want to talk through it and through your picks and your reasoning?
Yeah. As you say, I've just gone live, so it's just after six. I'll be honest, I've only read it through a couple of times, so it's bound to be riddled with spelling mistakes, so I'll go through it again properly afterwards. But yeah, you're right, Steve, it is a decent enough field for what is, again, just a small co-sanctioned event. And I guess part of the reason for that is what should have been another event next week, the Philippine Golf Championship or Masters or something or other, isn't happening now. So the European Tour rank and file haven't got an event now until after the Masters. They've got they've got a week off next week. It's the WGC match played a week after, then another week off, then the Masters. So the guys who aren't in that kind of lofty position aren't going to be playing now to the Spanish Open, which is in the second week of April. So A few of them have come over for this. So you've got the likes of Shubhanga Sharma, who, you know, played fantastic last week. He was in a great position, wasn't he, for 3 days, and then kind of slipped back on Sunday. And I know a lot of people on our Facebook group had taken a punt on him at around 300-1. Disappointment there that he didn't even place in the end. But, even so, again, good experience for the lad, and, he's going to be a force to be reckoned with going forward. So you've got him, Anibal Lahiri, Joost Luiten, Grillo's come over, Chris Wood, Pablo Larrabel, Wooden Larrabel and Grillo as well have all been playing well. You got SSP Chaurasia, who's won the last two Indian Opens. It's not a bad field altogether, I guess. The favourite is Sharma, as you might expect, and he's now the top-ranked player in the field in terms of OWGR on the back of his performance last week, so he's up to 66th. And this is his home course. He lives locally. He lives in this part of Delhi where they're playing, so... is attached to the course. You know, there's a lot of positives about Sharma this week. If you can overlook the fact that he's coming straight back from Mexico, where he's had a decent lead in a WGC and he's let it all slip. So, you know, he's coming in 14-1. I'm seeing right now, and he's been backed in quite heavily. So, you know, people aren't missing these kind of salient points associated with him this week. But whether you can overlook those two aspects is it's the decision you make, I guess. This is the third Indian Open they're playing as part of the European Tour. It's been going for donkey's years. It's the 54th altogether, I think. But they've only been playing for the last 3 years as a co-sanctioned event with the European Tour. And they played the first couple of renewals at the Delhi Golf Club, which was a tight, tree-lined, short, sub-7,000-yard affair. Which was quite a nice event or course to try and pick a winner out of, because you've got some good pointers there. These short courses, these classical style courses, Bermuda greens, and they suit a certain type. And it's no surprise to see a couple of locals won there. Lahiri won there, then Chaurasia won there in 2006 before it moved off to this current venue, which is a Gary Player track, completely different, 7,600 yards. From its tips. They actually play at around 7.3, just under 7.4, so it's shorter, and they've got lots of teeing options. So I remember last year everyone looked at the spec for this track, and as you get with the European Tour, you get a number and a very vague amount of information. So everyone looked at this, 7,600 yards, Chaurasia's never going to make that because it's far, far too long for him. And then he went and won by 7 shots because they didn't play it anywhere near the length, of course, that it can be. And
7 shots, that's incredible.
Yeah, it's you alluded to it at the start. It's a tough track.
Didn't Eddie Pepperell say it was designed by Satan last week on Twitter?
Yeah, he's given it a miss this time round.
What is so difficult about this course then?
I think every single shot is demanding. And there's two nines. There's a quarry nine and there's a lakes nine. So the lakes nine, as you can imagine, is built around a couple of lakes, lots of water in play. It's tight, but it's not, it's not Delhi Golf Club tight. It's wider than that. But the greens are massive. There's huge greens. The greens in regulation numbers tend to be okay, but, there's 3 or 4 tiers on some of these greens, and trying to get close enough to actually make some putts is tough. The runoffs on some of these greens are obscene as well. And, we saw last year how many doubles and trebles. You know, it wasn't just a bogey you were making. It was double. You know, that some of these guys were going around not with a bogey-free round because they were making the 3 or 4 doubles and then a few birdies go with it. So we got to a point where there were only 7 players under par by the end of the week. Chaurasia won on 10 under, and I said he was 7 clear of the rest of the field. So it does play tough. And that wasn't in particularly difficult conditions last year, and they're not going to be particularly difficult this year either. So firm and fast. It's going to be up to about 90 degrees Fahrenheit, so it's going to be warm as well with that, and it's not going to be getting any softer, that's for sure. So I'm expecting it to be quite a challenge, I think.
Okay, who are you going for? What do you think's the key? Clearly, razor sharp short game. If it's SSP Chaurasia kind of country.
Yeah, well, if you have a look at the guys who finished first and second, so you've got Gavin Green finished second and Chao Raja finished first. And, you know, Chao Raja is always down near the bottom of the driving distance charts because he's short off the tee. He was 67th out of 69 who made the cut in terms of his DD last year. And Green was similar, he was 60th out of 69. So even though they're going to play a course that is going to be playing circa 7,300 yards, and they will change the tees from day to day, and Saturday will probably be significantly shorter as they make it scoreable, etc. But yeah, it's not about driving distance. The driving accuracy, the more accurate players could get round there without making as many bogeys. So if you've got someone who's going from tee to green and makes a few putts, yeah, they could do it that way. Chao Raja did it the other way, which he tends to do. So he's not wildly inaccurate, Chao Raja. His green, his irons just tend to be the letdown for him. So he tends to hit more fairways than he hits greens, and then makes up for it on and around the putting surfaces himself. But yeah, he led the field for scrambling last year. And he was seventh, I think, for putting. So you look at that as a blueprint and think, well, someone who's capable of saving his par by, you know, a razor short sharp game is going to be that kind of player who can contend here. For me, there's a certain mindset to a type of track where you go and you know that it's demanding from the outset.
Yeah, yeah. Sounds like what we need at the Valspar as well this week. Very similar.
Yeah, you know, when you go to the likes of a Valderrama, and this isn't Valderrama, but if you know, taking that as a comparison, you go to Valderrama and you know that you're going to have to grind out a score. You're going to have to, you know, you've got your fairways and greens there. You've got to take your par and move on to the next hole. And this is a slightly different challenge because the greens are bigger, it's wider. You know, it's runoffs, it's not tree lined in the same respect as Valderrama, so it's a different type of or test, but the principles are the same. And if you're making bogeys and doubles early on in your round, there's a lot of players who go off the rails.
Players
who can't mentally handle that. And those who can, you know, can make, you know, your first nine, you might be four over par. And the players who can pull that round or finish the round off in two over par and still be fighting for the next day, because they're still in contention, they're not out of it by any stretch, are the ones who, you know, they've got the mindset to be able to do that. The guys who can't handle that are the ones who finish 8 or 10 over, miss the cut, and it's kind of sayonara. So yeah, I've gone through and I've looked at performances on the more technical tracks around the, you know, on the tour. And I think really, when I looked at the first opening show this morning, Chao Raja was coming in at 50 to 1. He opened at 50-1 with one of the bookies this morning, and you know, it was absolutely hammered, because that's never the right price for him. And I've put him up at 25-1 because that's where the price has settled very, very quickly, and I think that's probably the right kind of price for him this week. He's come off the back of two consecutive Indian Open wins. He's got four runner-up finishes in this event on various tracks over the years. All four of his European Tour victories are in Delhi, so you know, he absolutely loves this particular part of the world. You know, he's very, very comfortable in his homeland, and I can't see any reason whatsoever to miss him out. You know, he's coming in 6th, 7th favourite now, and if he'd shown any kind of positive form in 2018, he'd be short still. And you go back to the back end of last year, he'd finished got it down somewhere, second in one of the Asian Tour events, 7th at Hong Kong, 10th in another one of the Asian Tour events. So, you know, his back end of 2017 form was reasonable enough.
Remember him at Hong Kong. He played well. Yeah, I think might have been on. I think you're on him that way.
He's just he's just started this year slowly. You know, he could have gone. He was due to go over to New Zealand to play in one of the Australasian events last week, and chose to stay in Delhi to practice ready for this. And
okay.
I was reading some of the quotes from him from over the weekend, and he said, "Look, I'm happy with the game. The long game's good. Chipping and putting's good. You know, just looking forward to defending." So, yeah, can you turn him down, really? You know, it's 25-1 at the moment. I suspect he'll go even shorter than that. I dare say the newspaper tipsters will tip him up. And, you know, is he going to be sub-20-1 by the time he goes off on Thursday? I wouldn't be surprised.
So. I'm going to ask you a difficult question, Barry, because I like asking you difficult questions. I can already see that with Chao Raja, Sharma, he's being backed quite heavily already. How do you think Sharma will react to his performance in Mexico, the disappointment in round four, and then the travel back? Do you think he's going to be one of these kind of guys that kind of shrugs all that off, and because it's his own open, he's going to be a contender up there with the likes of, you know, Lahiri and Chaurasia? Or do you think it might go the other way, which is what Paul's kind of inclined to think? There you go, that's a difficult question for you.
Yeah, predict the future, it's an easy one. I think I heard on the broadcast last night that he's heading back via New York, so that's adding a little bit of time to his trip back. So, you know, there's that, to, you know, a little bit more to bear in mind for, you know, how fresh he arrives there. But, like, do you know what? Like, of course he will have gone in with expectations in the final round of possibly winning the tournament. But I think because, you know, of his inexperience at that level, the belief might not have been there. So it's only going to serve him well having, you know, gone through that. Has, you know, he didn't exactly play a dreadful final round. It was just, you know, a couple of putts, you know, lipped out. That would have changed the momentum for him. So, like, 74 is no big shame or big disaster. And, you know, for,
not far from it.
For facing
it, it wasn't a collapse, was it?
No, not at all. Like, it was just, things just didn't, he just didn't get the ball rolling for himself, you know, metaphorically. So, look, I think he'll be feeling very confident after it. He'll take the lessons learned, and you know, if he's a smart kid, he'll have, you know, absorbed an awful lot of things last week, and you know, he could put it to very good use. You know, he's gone back home. That's got to be worth, you know, some part of a shot, or maybe a shot per day, per, you know, just from that home vibe, and has a pretty decent record in this event the last 3 years. So, look, I'd say he goes okay. Probably fizzles out of, you know, towards the end of the tournament, just because purely running out of energy, you know, the adrenaline might kind of wear away. But, you know, he could very easily top 20, and, you know, if he's in that position, why not put a little charge on?
Yeah, okay, that's interesting.
The one thing that's interesting is that he went, you know, before he went to the WGC, he had a couple of missed cuts in a row, so which is kind of strange after his win. That could be just his expectations building, and that, you know, getting in the way of him performing. So, you know, if he's learning at a rate that which these young lads are learning these days, he could very well show up here.
Do you think he's more of a scorer in your mind, Paul?
Yes. Yeah. So I think he's happier, and a lot of the young lads will be. Well, you know, they're learning their game, and they're going out and they're making birdies. And when you get into a negative spiral on a course or a course that's testing, and you're kind of grinding out pars and making the odd bogey, it's more difficult for them to adjust and adapt to. You know, we talked about John Rahm before, and, you know, of the majors that he is likely to win over the course of his career, I expect the US Open to be the fourth of four, should he get to the point where he's going for a personal grand slam.
He seems to be the kind of player that's far more comfortable on a softer golf course you can attack.
Yeah, precisely.
Yeah.
So, and I think that's a lot of that's just with experience. So, you know, these tougher tests, it's a certain mindset, it's a certain type of player, and yeah, generally it may well be an older player who's capable of getting their head in the right kind of space. When Chaurasia's 39, he's been around, he's, you know, he's won events for the last couple of decades. So, you know, he's capable of adapting his game to be patient, and I'm sure, you know, some of these younger lads, they will struggle to get into that mindset, and they'll start making bogeys and chase it, and then the doubles and trebles come, and before you know it, they're going home for the weekend.
Now, I can see your second selection is the kind of guy that you discussed a little while ago in terms of some form on tougher, higher scoring tracks.
Yeah, so you got, you go down the list of players who perform well on, you know, the kind of tracks I'm thinking are the likes of Valderrama, the likes of Le Golf National, where you've got a low winning score. And if you go back through the last couple of years, the one that stands out for me here is Andrew Johnson. So we know with Beef, he went off to play the PGA Tour last year and spent a lot of his time partying, really. And, you know, by his own estimation, he didn't play much quality golf. I think he only got one top 10 in the whole of 2017. And spent a lot of time, you know, he had a lot of media commitments because he was, you know, he was suddenly the, you know, one of the golf's big celebrities. But he's come back to the European Tour. He's a bit more focused. Top 10 in Abu Dhabi. He was 12th last time out in Oman, and he's starting to find his long game again. So a bit of focus, you know, he's a former Valderrama winner. He won that 2016 Spanish Open and won over par, and that's the kind of history form that suggests that he's the kind of player who can adapt to this kind of event and hang around when the going is tough, and I'm sure it'll be pretty challenging all week. I looked through because I was concerned about his Bermuda grass putting, but he's got form on Bermuda. He topped the putting charts at Qatar a couple of years ago, so and that's not a particularly easy place to putt on either with the Bermuda greens there. So I've got no real concerns with that. And Johnson's coming in at 33-1 with Cole at the moment, with seven places. So I've taken him and Chaurasia at the top of the market. You know, there were a few others that I could have gone for, but I've gone down the list a bit for a couple of longer shots. And following the same kind of principle, really, I've gone for Tong Chai Jide, who's 100-1 at the moment with Betfred, with six places each way. And he's a previous Open de France winner. He's won, eight times on the European Tour. And a lot of those early titles were on Asian soil. And he's kind of adapted his game over the years to get to a point where he's won in Wales, he's won in France, as I say, he's won in Germany. So he's kind of moved on from that being just a kind of an Asian specialist, as it were, at the time. And, you know, we saw Mickelson last week, was he 47? Jide is 48. These guys are still fit, they're still capable of contending at this kind of level. Mm. And the last one, not dissimilar really, he's a bit younger, Eduardo Molinari. Molinari won last year at the Trofeo Ascender, which was his first win for 6-7 years. He'd struggled a bit with injuries over that time. You know, he kept having to go to Q school to come back to get his card. And he started to play a little better last year. He was 11th in this, which was one of the signals for him playing some better golf, and then went and won in Morocco on his next start. So that was encouraging from his perspective. He was 16th in Oman on his last one start. Hitting a lot of greens as well, 82% of greens in Doha. In Qatar on his last start, and he was second for GIR in Dubai as well.
Okay.
A couple of starts back. So when his long game's on, and we know with Eduardo, his short game can be fantastic. That's you know, he was kind of the direct opposite to his brother at that point in time, wasn't he? You know, he'd be the putter, and Francesco was the tee to green man. But he's clearly stepped up his game from tee to green, and in those weeks where he can find greens in regulation and the putter's working and his short game's working, he's going to be contending. And 150-1 I'm seeing at the moment with seven places. So yeah, I've taken him as well.
It's in the dim and distant past, but I think I can remember him doing well on Bermuda grass greens.
Yeah,
His heyday.
Yeah, I don't think he's got a problem on him. I think, and these are good quality greens as well. They're really quite smooth. So the good putters are going to enjoy them if they can get close enough to the hole. The challenge really will be trying to get the ball close to the hole in.
So they're your two bombs, yeah? Bombs.
Yeah, they're the ones who bomb out, I expect, yeah.
Right, they're the bombs. Okay. Have you got any bombs for us this week? Barry,
no.
On the Indian Open, or are you giving it a complete miss?
No, my bombs have dead fuses at the moment. So they just don't go off. If I do come up with something that catches my eye, I'll fire it out on our Twitter. I'm gonna rein back the betting for a little bit this week, and I might end up passing on this, but I'll cast the eye over it and see what happens.
Who's gonna really piss you off then, Paul? Of players that you should have selected but haven't. Who do you reckon's going? Who's gonna be the one or two?
Well, yeah, you know, I've been on Rathbel recently, and I expect the week I'm not on him, he'll probably go win. But
and Barry has, yeah.
The real dilemma was whether to go with Sharma or not, and I think there's just enough to suggest that he, you know, it's a big ask for him to come out and perform here this week. And if he wins, again, like Coatsy last week, I won't be surprised if he wins, because he's clearly a talented lad and capable of doing that. But I think there's just a little bit more juice further down the list, and hopefully get a decent return out of one or more of my boys.
So Pablo, it is,
yeah? Yeah, he's the one.
Do you think
get back him.
Sorry, do you think this course is just a bit too testing of patience that he doesn't quite have?
With Pablo?
Yeah.
Although, again, he's won at Le Golf National, hasn't he? So he's, you know, he's capable of getting into that kind of,
mode.
Set of a more difficult track. But,
it's the price, isn't it? If he's at 50-1, I'm of course I'm on. But 25-1 for Pablo, I'm going. Yeah. You know.
Yeah. Does he just? You got at the same price. You've got a guy who's won here last year by 7 shots. He absolutely loves playing in the country. He thrives in Delhi, and you got him against Pablo, who, you know, best ball in the world. We know he can be a bit flaky, and I've gone down the Chaurasia route at that kind of price.
Just briefly before we get on to the Valspar, anything to be said for Scott Jameson? I haven't gone too deep into his form or, you know, what he can do, but like, he was 7th last week, and he was 3rd here last year. Is that a fluke again, performance or?
No, I mean, on the combination of form and course form, there's a few like that you could make a case for. What I find with a lot of these European Tour players is trying to get them to string 2 consecutive weeks together is pretty tough. They're not the PGA Tour superstars who can go out and, you know, go 2, 3, 4 wins or weeks on the trot where they're really contending. These guys will have a big week, and if they earn a few quid, mentally they might take a week off. It's going to be a big old ask for him mentally this week regardless, and I think that's where the real challenge will be. So someone who was in the mix heavily last week on either side of the Atlantic might well struggle. So I've kind of steered clear, but on paper, again, you look at his numbers and there's a good case for him.
Let's go across the Atlantic, shall we?
I think we should. The Valspar Championship, it's a decent event. A very strong field this year. This tends to be the event on the Florida swing that's always been the poor relation. But this year we're seeing Spieth, we're seeing McIlroy, Sergio, Justin Rose, Henrik Stenson, Paul Casey, and of course, Tiger Woods. So Tiger Woods makes his course and tournament debut. I can see there's already a little bit of blue on his name. But it's going to be a really tough event this week. The forecast looks pretty punishing, I have to say. Let me read this out to you. Now, you guys know that Copperhead, where this is played, it's a 7,300-yard par 71. It's not a standard setup, though, in terms of par 71s. You know, your standard par 71 would have 3 par 5s. Well, this has got 4 par 5s and 5 par 3s. So there's a case for looking for players that are clearly doing a lot of scoring on par 5s at the moment, because effectively you've got the same amount of par 5s on this as you would on a standard par 72. But anyway, we digress. It's a tough golf course, though. Now, last year, and one of the players I really seriously had in mind for this was Adam Hadwin, because we know that Hadwin finished very, very well at Riviera. He played very well last week to get a top 10 down in Mexico at the WGC level. I haven't gone for him this week, but one of the main reason I haven't gone for him is the weather forecast. It looks absolutely nasty. This is from 10 minutes ago. I use Windfinder on the internet to get this kind of stuff. We're looking at 13 to 17 miles per hour winds on Thursday, gusting up to 22. Friday is where the scoring is going to happen. The wind disappears, and you're looking sub 10 mile an hour winds across Friday. So you're going to see a lot of movement. You're going to see people shooting, you know, your 64s, your 65s to get them in, you know, towards the top of the leaderboard. But then Saturday, we're looking at 15 to 20, gusting 25 miles an hour. And Sunday, we're seeing anything 25 miles an hour, gusting up to 35 miles an hour. And when I looked this morning, it looked like that a lot of the play, I mean, this is, we're talking Sunday here, we're clearly discussing this Monday. But it looked like the weather was going to be full of thunderstorms throughout the day. But just in the last 4 hours, all of a sudden, the thunderstorms have moved forward in the day. So anything up to about 7, 8 o'clock, the rain then disappears. And it looks like that the weather's going to be clear, but it's going to be extremely windy. And you can think about that, well, we don't know about the forecast. Even if it goes to a Monday finish, we're still looking at 20 to 25 mile an hour winds. There hasn't been a lot of wind, a lot of rain in this part of Tampa. It's the west coast of Florida, not the east. There hasn't been a lot of rain, so I would expect that players are turning up to a very firm and fast golf course. But there is rain forecast tomorrow night after they clear the course. And into Wednesday morning, it looks like there's going to be a hell of a downpour overnight Tuesday into Wednesday. So for me, I think we're going to see a fairly soft golf course across Thursday, Friday. A lot of wind on Thursday, but then I think it's going to be scoreable on Friday when the wind disappears. But then there's threats of rain. I think there's going to be rain Sunday going into Saturday night going into Sunday. So we could see a very soft golf course on Sunday with winds anything up to 35 mile an hour gusting. So I think it shouts to me that potentially we need to be looking for players that have got a little bit of power behind them potentially, or at least they like a bit of cut in the ground. We're definitely looking for players that can grind, can scramble. We're looking for players that are good in the wind. But, and this is critical here, it tends to suggest, of course, when you look at this, especially with wind, we're going to see the amount of greens in regulation percentages fall. So for me, it does bring into play both ball strikers, but also those guys that can hit 60, 66% of greens, but have got their standard great putting and scrambling game. They'll still be able to get round, keep bogeys off the card and score on the par fives. So I think it kind of could play into two fields here. Your Kevin Na type, who can scramble and score, keep the card clean, putt well, but also the ball strikers. But, and this is something that really does come out in the stats here, it doesn't matter really if it's a calm year like last year where 14 under won Adam Hadwin, or if it's an 8 under year like the year before where Charles Schwartzel won and we were looking at wind across all 4 days. It was really, really nasty in 2016. He won at 8 under. What you do see with all of the statistics here of previous winners is, you know, the likes of ball strikers that can't putt well will not, they can contend, but they won't win. Because the clear statistic that I see when you look across, you know, driving accuracy, greens in regulation, scrambling, proximity, it's the putting, the putts per GIR, the putting average number is consistent. It averages out across all of the winners the last 8 years at fifth. So fifth in the field for putting. Mm-hmm. Even the year that John Sendon won, and you think, John Sendon, he can't putt. Well, the year that he won this in 2014, he was actually putting quite nicely. He was in the top 15 or 20 for strokes going putting going into this. So we're going to need someone that clearly is a hot putter or is going to get the job done on the greens with the flat stick mm-hmm. this week. And that's kind of where I'm at. I haven't got to the point of publishing my preview. I'll be doing it tomorrow. I wanted just to see what's happening with this forecast. Because when I looked this morning, it really did look like, and it could look like this again in the morning, that AM PM starters were going to get a huge advantage with lower wind on the Thursday and no wind on the Friday. But it looks like it's kind of levelling out now, where there isn't going to be too much advantage across the two groupings this year. But for me, I'm looking for a well-rounded player who can avoid bogeys, who can putt particularly well on these greens, Bermuda grass greens, and who is a fantastic win player. Someone, it kind of suggests to me, an experienced player who, you know, as you were saying, Paul, over in India, someone that's quite happy making 5-6 pars in a row, knowing that there are scoring holes to come and can play that kind of strategic game, rather than your all out birdie kind of guy that as soon as there's a few bogeys on the card, they completely, you know, they lose the will to live, that kind of player.
Just a mentality, you know, approach.
Yeah, you're going to need a strong mentality this week looking at this forecast. Plus, I think you're going to have to be switched on enough to know that Friday is go day. You know, there's going to be low scoring Friday, and this is where I move into position. And from that point on, we're holding on for grim death.
Should be an interesting tournament.
Yeah, definitely. There's also, there's eight. Clearly, I always look going back to 2010, eight winners of this. And it's interesting how they split. It literally splits 50-50. So Jim Furyk, 2010, Luke Donald, 2012, Jordan Spieth, 2015, Charles Schwartzel, 2016. So elite players. In the case of Furyk, he hadn't won for a couple of years. He'd won the Chevron World Challenge in the winter. Clearly playing some half-decent golf. Hadn't won on the PGA Tour. Gets the job done here. Luke Donald in 2012 was 11-1. He was at the point having a head-to-head with Rory McIlroy, who was world number one. Jordan Spieth in 2015, he won this at 16-1, and he hadn't. I don't know if you cast your mind back at this point. 2015 was clearly his glory year, but at this point he hadn't won a tournament since he got his maiden victory in 2013. So he'd gone through this period of not winning on the PGA Tour, and Charles Schwartzel in 2016. He hadn't won in America since he won the 2011 Masters. So there's this thing here about, you know, elite players. If you're looking for an elite player, for me, you need to be looking at a player that's got a real need, a real desire to do well this week. You know, not someone that's just sharpening their game for the World Match Play and for Augusta. Someone that really has got that deep desire to, you know, whether that be win a tournament in the States for the first time in a while, like Phil did last week, or potentially a player who's, you know, playing so well at the moment, they just, you know, like a Justin Thomas type. But I don't see anyone like that in the field this week. The other four, Gary Woodland, he won here on debut in 2011. Kevin Streelman in 2012, John Sendon in 2014, and Adam Hadwin last year. They all won at 125-1. Woodland was 100s. Streelman was 200s. Hadwin was 125-1. And John Sendon was also 125-1.
Was this the one where Streelman reeled off like 9 birdies on the trot to win? Or was that a different event?
That was the Travellers.
Right, okay.
This is the one where I tipped him up in. I tipped him out up in. I think it was Puerto Rico. He missed the cut. Naturally, came back to the States the next week and he won.
Yeah,
that was the year. But yeah, it's going to be a really interesting test this week. I've got no doubt about that. What do you guys remember of the course? And Barry, I mean, let's talk to you. Who in the field have you got a real interest in this week? Before I mention, I've got two players that I'm definitely going to tip up. I know that, but let's get your feedback first.
I'm not going to, like I said, talk about the Hero Indian. I'm not going to go with too many bets this week. I'm going to rein it back in. My focus has kind of narrowed in on one of my favourite players, Ryan Moore. So he's 10th a couple of weeks ago, or 3 weeks back at Riviera, and he's got a pretty savage record around here the last 3 years, with a 5th, a 3rd, and an 18th. And so I just snapped him up at 45-1 on Skybet, which is paying eight places. So he's got that, for me, he's got that kind of maturity about him that he can grind out scores when the going gets tough. But he can also get extremely hot and rip off a few birdies. So he's got the combination that seems to be required this week to grind it out, but also take advantage of the of a little bit of scoring when it's available, when the conditions are okay on Friday.
Interesting with Moore, because he's one that's definitely on my shortlist. Topped greens in regulation last time out at the Honda Classic.
So clearly
finding a lot of greens. And then he putted like a dork last time. That doesn't mean... No. Bear with me. That doesn't mean a great deal. But then when he finished in the top 10, like you said, at Riviera, he putted brilliantly. And I think this course for him is clearly somewhere where he's very comfortable. He knows the greens inside out. I can see Moore having a great week. I think that's a cracking tip.
And the other thing I notice about him, he's got a little bit of motivation to get himself back inside the top 50.
Just looking here, he's
slipped to 68th, and I don't think that'll sit too well with him, having missed like the WGC. And unless he was 50th at the turn of the year, or inside the top 50 at the turn of the year, I don't think he'd be at Augusta.
I think he finished ninth there last year, so he's actually got a Augusta invite.
Okay,
it's top 12.
There we go. Right, so okay. So he's got that in mind, but he's still, you know, you want to get back inside that top 50. So,
well, don't forget as well, we've got the match play coming up. So you're probably looking there'll be four or five pullouts. So probably top 69, top 70 in the world will scrape him.
He should get into that as long as he holds his position this week. But anyway, it's a golf pro's focus is not just about getting to Augusta, it's about being in all the top events, and that's enough motivation for him, having slid down the rankings a little bit recently. So we'll see can he match up his recent good stats and good course form.
I think that's a cracking punt, I really do. I would not be surprised if I include Moore tomorrow.
We just for the listeners, we did not collude before the show.
No, we didn't.
Look,
just to be clear, he's got an Augusta invite, he's got the PGA Championship invite, and that's about it. So for a player of his ilk who was in the Ryder Cup 18 months ago, he's clearly slipping. He's that kind of elite player that needs to perform and perform quickly, and clearly it's a course that suits. I tell you what else I noticed about here is, and this is kind of bizarre, but it's true. When you look at previous winners around here, most of them actually haven't won on Bermuda grass. So Hadwin, clearly, because he was a maiden, never won on Bermuda, but he'd won on Bermuda grass on the web.com. But Charles Svartzel, he'd never won on Bermuda grass in the States. Nor Jordan Spieth at this point, nor John Senden, nor Streelman. So, there's something in that. Ryan Moore's never won on Bermuda grass, but we know that he putts well round here. So yeah, I can see Moore. I can definitely see that. What about you, Paul? Thoughts?
Well, I kind of said to you last week when we were pulling together the preliminary stats for this that Kevin Na sticks out because of his previous form round here, and he was second at Riviera on his last start. And I think he's got three top tens in. He was runner up 3 or 4 years ago as well. So. And for outrights, he kind of sticks out. Whether he fits, given what you said in terms of the conditions, probably needs a little bit more thought. Two first-round leader punts that I'll wait and see what the forecast and the draw ends up being like. But Charlie Hoffman, he should be circa 80-1 for a first-round leader, between 66 and 80. And he's got a lot of the attributes you were talking about, particularly in the wind as well. And he does like a fast start, does Charlie. And the other one is my staple first round leader bet, which is Matt Every, and Every's finished first round leader here in the past. He's shown absolutely no form whatsoever, but that's perfect for first round leader in terms of getting a cracking price. So I wouldn't be surprised if you get 300-1 about him being first round leader. So once I've seen the draw and see whereabouts those two are playing, then I'll see if that's a viable bet for this week as well.
I know we've got to wrap this up. I'll just give you my summary. Jordan Spieth, I still think he's struggling with his putting. I don't think he'd be playing this if his game was in good shape. He'd give this a miss. I think the same with Rory. I don't think he'd be playing this if his game was in great shape. Sergio, for me, seems to be not scrambling particularly brilliantly. And I wonder about Sergio, whether he can string two, very high-profile finishes together in the States, because he doesn't seem to have done it for quite a period of time. Justin Rose always seems to struggle on the greens here, so you could build a case for Rosie. Stenson, this is his first PGA Tour outing in the States this year. That puts me completely off Stenson. Paul Casey, Paul could win, couldn't he? But he could win any day of the season. 25-1 for a guy that hasn't won since 2009. I mean, that takes Phil Mickelson's performance last week to extremes if you're on Casey this week. Tiger Woods, got to be tempting at 33s. We know he showed quite a lot at PGA National a few weeks ago. The only thing that puts me off Woods, well, two things. Never played the golf course in competition. And secondly, this golf course is tree-lined. And we saw what he did at Riviera. He was all over the place off the tee when it came to a tree-lined golf course.
Yeah,
I don't think this is as punishing off the tee, but I think that's enough for me not to go with Woods. Although, next week in mind, it'd be interesting to see how well he goes with Bay Hill next around the corner. The two I'm interested in, I mentioned Adam Hadwin, but he doesn't rank nearly high enough on my positive win stats, nowhere near what I want to see. I think Ben Ann could have a good week. Adam Scott is very, very tempted because Scott actually found the putter last time out at the Honda, and I'm seeing a bit of 50-1 about Scott. So that's one potentially to bear in mind. But the one I've gone for definitely at the moment is Webb Simpson. I think Simpson falls into the mould here. Bogey avoidance, I think he's fifth so far this season. He's putting so well at the moment. He's sixth for strokes gained putting at the moment. He's finished second here in the past. He's got four top 20s. I just see him going well. Great win player. A soft golf course won't put him off in anywhere, shape or form. And he played really well at PGA National a couple of weeks ago, didn't he? When he went out in the last group, finished fifth. The other one I like, and I can't believe the price that I'm seeing about him, although there's already blue on Odds Checker. Top 25 in the world, Charlie Hoffman 100-1 with Coral. I just think seven places each way. Charlie Hoffman ranks in the top three in my statistics for win positive players. And you always know with Charlie, never does too much on the West Coast, but as soon as he gets to these classical golf courses, yeah, where there's a bit of tree, tougher golf courses, tree lined. We know that he was leading at the Masters last year. He can mix it at the very high echelons now. I just think 100-1 about Hoffman this week on a course where three times he's been in the top seven or eight after 54 holes. Last time he did that, I think, was 2015. He was third after 54 holes. I think if you give him a decent position this time around, with the fact that he's got a bit more confidence about him, he knows that he's a better player these days. I could see Hoffman going really well this week. So I'm going to definitely go for Charlie Hoffman, whether the 100-1 is still about. But yes, Charlie Hoffman's definitely going to be in my selections. What do you think?
Well, I mean, I think it's time we all had a couple of winners between us. I'm hoping for a turnaround of fortunes. But, every week you put in the effort and you just hope that the stars align and the bets click. Fingers crossed.
You've got to keep digging. There's wins out there.
Fingers crossed.
Right, thank you, chaps, for your time. Much appreciated as ever. We'll be back next week. Thank you for listening. And as I said at the very start of the show, if you're listening to iTunes, please do spend some time and drop us a review. We'd really appreciate that. Thanks for your time, and we will see you again next week. Thank you.